broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University. This is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
With the governor's signature, Maryland becomes the eighth state to legalize same-sex marriage, but the battle is not expected to be over until the November election. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Legislation also does not allow any wedding ceremonies until January of next year. That gives opponents time to gather the 56,000 signatures needed to put the law on the ballot for a referendum this November. Take a look at the issue is Julia Glantz. She is with Equality Maryland, which has been working to get passage of the law. And also on the phone with us is Charles Lawler. He's with New Day of Maryland, which has been opposing the law. So welcome to you both. Julia, first of all, let me turn to you. So with the governor's signature, now we still have a bit long way to go, but it at least is now gotten out of the state legislature. What's your thoughts about where we are in terms of this battle?
Well, I think we're in a good place. You know, our state legislators took a brave step making sure that all our citizens are equal in the state. But, you know, I think we've got a lot of support in Maryland, and we can build off of this vote and make sure that we win in November if it goes to a referendum.
And Charles, where do you think we are in terms of this fight? Obviously, it is not over yet.
No. It's a long way from over. And we've got many organizations and coalitions out there that are really trying to ensure not that we take any rights away from any Mariners. That certainly is not the issue of the fight, but to at least allow this very, very important issue to be presented to the Maryland population, general citizenry, so they can vote for it, so they can determine what's best in terms of the direction that they want marriage and how marriage is defined to go forward in our state and I think eventually in our country. I think this particular vote and pretty soon a referendum has far-reaching consequences beyond our state. I really think it does. I think it goes to the very point of how we're going to define marriage going forward.
Well, now the governor apparently in his statement has said, quote, all children deserve the opportunity to live in a loving, caring, committed, and stable home, protected equally under the law. He goes on to say Maryland will now be able to protect individual civil marriage rights and also religious freedom equally. In short, the governor sees this as a way to protect children, to create committed, stable relationships. Well, at the same time, there's been certainly work on allowing certain religious groups to be able to feel comfortable with this. What's wrong with that statement, the idea that he's committed to this kind of stable relationship?
Well, if you're asking me, brother, I don't think there's anything wrong with that statement. In fact, I think that statement is spot on. I think every child deserves a stable home in which to live and raise and thrive. In fact, our nation was developed based upon that very same precedent in our state. Stable families. Stable families build stable communities. Stable communities build stable states and nations, of course, and et cetera. The problem is, however, that this bill does nothing to stabilize families. This bill, if we're going to call it what it is simply a way or opportunity for government funding, whether it's state funding or whether it's federal funding, to be recognized or to be given, to those who choose a different type of union or lifestyle. If you take the dollars and cents away from this argument, I guarantee you there wouldn't be an issue to be called for any union to be called anything other than what it is. Again, I have no problem whatsoever with people making decisions to be together because they love each other. I understand that, and if that means toward the stability of that child in which they're raising, I understand that too. But to really make this a battle about equality and about stabilizing children's lives because you get to change the term of marriage, which should not be changed, that's a little bit far-reaching for me.
Julie, what about that?
Well, I mean, words evolve and change over time since, you know, the beginning of words. I don't see the problem with looking at marriage in a different light now. I mean, you know, people are going to be together no matter what. They love each other, so why not give them the same rights? Why do you have to call it civil unions? It's not fair. It's discrimination. People deserve the same rights. Marriage and civil unions is separate but equal. And we've been through that already, and we know it's not fair.
Well, why do you think it is that it is so important for you that it be marriage to create this kind of stability that the governor talks about?
Well, it's, you know, whether you have it as a civil union or marriage and the same rights are there, that's one thing. But, you know, it's not the same. It's separate but equal. I have to use this water fountain and you have to use that one. It's taking it back to the 1960s. And, you know, why I don't understand why we have to call it, you know, if you look at you know, websites today, Merriam-Webster, you know, they have evolved to calling marriage between couples of opposite sex and same sex. You know, they've gotten on board. I mean, I don't understand what's so scary about, you know, the evolution of a word and taking in people of the same sex to call it marriage.
Now, Charles, it is true that one of the differences between civil unions and marriage in terms of the law, in terms of what we talk about as a law, is that there are certain, for instance, benefits in terms of taxes, in terms of the ability to, say, for instance, see a loved one who's in the hospital and so on. And the argument is certainly is being made that civil unions aren't, they don't really go far enough because it doesn't recognize these relationships in a real serious way, that is to say, in a very practical way. Well, what about that? Does that concern you? Go ahead.
You know, I'm sorry. You know, you make a fantastic point, and I'm anxious to talk about that, especially with the young lady on the phone. When you separate these two, if you take the dollar and cents out of the argument, I think that's where we have we find our biggest common ground of agreement. The government getting involved in subsidizing anything, any union, whether it's marriage, whether it's civil unions, no matter what it is, anytime the government gives other people's money to these types of things to celebrate or, I guess, kind of promote what the government wants to promote, it never ends. The young lady talked about what's the problem with the word being defined differently or this word changing. Marriage is a biblical term that no one can debate. It is not a secular term whatsoever. And to try to change marriage as it's defined between a male and a woman, between a man and a woman, would be trying to change the definition of a man. Just because a man can get a surgery and have certain parts of his body separated or changed, it's not going to change who he is. Same with a woman. These are issues really that are undebatable. And it's not really about making people upset or pushing toward equality or inequality or discrimination. We're just merely talking about facts. A man that's born a man is going to be a man, as a woman that's born a woman is going to be a woman. And marriage will always be defined as a man and a woman in a relationship together, in a committed relationship together. But going back to your point, if it's about benefits, then let's give everybody benefits, or let's give no one benefits. I don't think the government should be in the business of rewarding any couple, whether they're a traditional marriage or non-traditional marriage, based upon dollars and cents, because it gets us to where we are now. And one last thought I want to add is, where does it stop? Let's be honest with each other. If two men can come together and call it marriage and receive benefits, then why couldn't a man and his dog come together and call it benefits? And whenever I make that point or that argument, I tell you what, I get the biggest look like, Charles, now you're really reaching. But I'll tell you something, if a woman can leave a cat $3 million, that a cat can neither spit or do anything with, don't tell me I'm far-reaching. If we don't stop it now and let terms have their traditional definition, we're going to get ourselves in a lot of trouble.
Julia?
I mean, I think we're far-reaching here, and I don't even want to touch some of that. But Charles, can you tell me what's going to happen if we, you know, honor a marriage between two men? What is that going to happen? What's going to happen to society? We've seen it in seven other states and Washington, D.C. We've seen it in Canada, in countries in Europe. I don't think that their countries and states are having issues with this. What? Tell me. Give me it.
Yeah, I think you made a good point. And I do agree with you, except for the words you use. I think we should recognize the love that two people have for each other. There's nothing wrong with that. If two people have share a common bond and they forge a relationship, we should absolutely respect that. We should absolutely honor that. But you can't change a term just to fit something to try to make it the same as the other. They're two very different relationships. Two relationships between a man and a man is not the same relationship between a man and a woman. And here's why. Here's why, in simplicity. Two men cannot procreate. Two women cannot procreate. Marriage is defined in terms of the fruit that comes as a result of that union. And that's not debatable. And until two men or two women can go into a room on their own and come out with a child, you cannot call it marriage.
Julia?
Well, Charles, I mean, you know, there are lots of couples out there that of opposite sex that can't have children. You know, what about those people? Are you, they shouldn't have the same rights as everybody else just because they can't have children?
Well, now, this is not about rights. Please don't do that. This is not about rights. I believe that everyone should have the civil rights and the unalienable rights that God has given every human being. So I don't even want to touch that. This is not about rights. We're not taking anybody's rights away from them. All I'm talking about is that defined word that we call marriage. If you have a male and female that cannot have children, I mean, I understand what it's like to want a child and can't have one. I'm grateful for the daughters that I have. However, in no study in the history of mankind will you ever find two men or two women being able to procreate. But you can find it with a man and a woman. So let's not take isolated incidents and try to form a point, because it really doesn't work.
Charles, I'll sort of interject here, because there are two issues, it seems to me, in terms of what we're discussing here. On the one hand, in terms of religious context and churches and so on, they certainly have every right to define marriage as they decide, see fit, and to marry people they want and people they don't have and don't want. But we're talking about marriage in terms, in a legal sense of the word, which has civil implications.
Right.
And that seems to me to be a separate definition of marriage than, say, from a religious one, say, that occurs in a church. And so when we talk about rights and talk about whether it's privileges or rights or what have you in terms of what comes with a marriage, we're really talking about the legal sense of the word. And I think the governor certainly is also talking about that in the same sense. So that it seems to me that the concept of marriage as a biblical institution can still continue to exist, because we have churches and they are free to do as they want. But when you talk about, for instance, the rights of, say, individuals before the law or to be treated equally before the law, then the term marriage, which obviously carries more rights and more privileges, certainly in this society, would continue to go. That seems to me that's a separate issue when you talk about the concept of marriage.
Yeah, see, I completely agree with you. See, if we could just simply do it this way and say those that have committed relationships that are committed to one another, and we want to call them, we can call them what they are, unions, civil unions between two people, then why couldn't they get the same benefits? It really does boil down to that word marriage. That's why I made it clear in New Day, Maryland, across the state of Maryland, our organization, we've made it clear. This is not an argument about equality. It's an argument about a word that honestly can't be changed. It's a biblical term, and you can't change that word marriage. You can call it something else, which we've been doing for years. That's how civil unions came to pass anyway. And I truly believe this, that if civil unions were able to get the same benefits of those that are called married, then we wouldn't even be on the phone having this conversation.
Julia?
I mean, I just have to disagree. I mean, if it's the same thing, but you're calling it something different, it's separate but equal, and, you know, you're creating a class of second-class citizens, and that's just not right. And you know, it has to be marriage.
You know, we do have the federal government, which for better or for worse, just uses this concept of marriage, uses the word marriage, provides benefits as a result, and so that civil unions don't at least measure up, at least currently, in terms of the kinds of advantages or rights that you're talking about. How would you address that disparity that we have? Charles?
Oh, you posed that question to me?
Yeah, yeah. Because the federal government talks about marriage, and it only recognizes marriage for certain tax benefits and so on. And that's the way things exist right now. I mean, and so there's a lot of states are now moving towards legalizing marriage between a man and a man, or woman and woman, because of that disparity. So if we're trying to deal with the issue right now, it seems to me that certainly the supporters would say, well, we have to at least move towards the concept of gay marriage, because that's how the federal government takes a look at this thing.
Yeah,
I mean, aren't you boxed in here?
I think that's a bigger part of the problem that we're facing here. I think the problem is the government has become way too overreaching, far too overreaching. The government has taken the liberty to use our taxpayers' dollars and put them in areas to try to promote certain ways of life, to try to promote certain ways in business, to try to promote certain ways in people's lives. And I think the same time that the government can be extended in any measure, or overextended for that matter, to provide dollars and cents for activities, they can take them away. See, I think that the government, whether federal or state, has way too much power. We're talking about a social issue. We're talking about a personal issue of two people who have feelings for each other, who want to spend the rest of their lives together in a committed relationship. I don't believe the government has any business whatsoever to do in that business. And again, I mean, I know we've said this over and over again, but if you take those benefits and factors away, there's not even an issue. Because a civil union, whether you call it a civil union or whether you call it a union or whatever you call that type of non-traditional connection, you can call it what you want. It doesn't change how two people feel about them. My wife and I, we've been married for 18 years. I've known her for 20. I often say we've been together for 20. If somebody said that what you have is not a marriage, it wouldn't impact the way I feel about my wife. It would not impact the way she feels about me. But again, and I have to harp on this, and it's something that Julie and a lot of her friends and others that will hear this segment have to understand, that marriage is defined not just upon a man and a woman, but procreation. And there's no way that two of the same sex can procreate. They cannot do it. And as a result, it cannot be called marriage.
Julie, I want to turn to you because aside from the legal issues that we've been talking about and the advantages and disadvantages of marriage, what does that concept of marriage mean for you emotionally and in terms of how you are seen by the rest of society, above and beyond simply the tax purposes for why people get married and tax advantages and so on? What does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, I think if you have, you know, two children in school and one has, you know, heterosexual parents and they can call it marriage, and, you know, you have another kid who has, you know, a gay parent, and, you know, yeah, they still get the same love and comfort and support at home, and but, you know, it's just not the same. And
do you think you relate differently to people if you've got this distinction between civil marriage, between say a civil union and a marriage? I mean, do you think it is?
Yeah, I think in today's society, yes, you definitely have a distinction. You know, I mean, if somebody tells you that they're identify as, you know, gay or lesbian or something, you first get that. There's always a reaction. You know, you don't get that if you say I'm straight. I have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. You know, you never get that. But you constantly see that for, you know, the gay and lesbian community. And, you know, by calling it the same thing, we're trying to erase that reaction, that stigmatism that we currently have. And we're improving with time and with, you know, just culture evolving. But by calling it marriage, and, you know, it's, you know, you can't help who you love. So, you know, you need the same rights and the same name, I think.
I want to turn to some of the politics of this in the last portion of this show because, first of all, Charles, you got to gather 56,000 signatures to get this thing on the ballot. I think I saw somewhere where some suggested you might try to shoot for 100,000 to make sure everything is copacetic there. What is headed towards the November. Are you confident that you can gain those signatures? And why do you think you're confident in that?
Oh my goodness! To be honest, is overwhelming. We had a rally in Annapolis, and the newspapers reported it's 200 or 300 people. We had easily 3,000 people. One church alone brought a busload of 500 people with them. Several busloads of 500 people with them. That's just one church in Prince George's County. we had such an outpouring of support, not because people, again, not because people were upset or that they hated people. It wasn't a hatred rally. It was very much a love rally. I spoke at the rally. A lot of the clippings from my speeches are right there on YouTube, so anyone can really see them and hear them. We have a tremendous outpouring across the state. And here's the beautiful thing, too. It's not just Republicans. It's not just Democrats. It's not just independents. We had a collection of all partisans represented, parties represented, as well as skin color. We had brown Americans, white Americans, Hispanic Americans, or Marylanders. Not only are we going to get the 50-plus thousand that we need, we're going to get quite a bit more than that, and the referendum's going to pass. But I do want to say this, too, from a political standpoint. It's not going to pass because it's because of the Republican issue. It's not going to pass because of the Democrat issue. It's not going to pass because of the political one. It's going to pass, and it's going to get overturned because of that word marriage. And people, most Marylanders understand that marriage has a foundation and as a defined word. It's very much a biblical word, and no one really feels like that should, well, the majority of Marylanders don't feel as if that should be changed. Just like Proposition out there in California that was overturned, it's going to happen here too. I just really hope that out of this, though, there's not that tinge of, man, those people are just, they're discriminants. They want to push inequality, because that is not the issue at all. I believe that everyone should have the right to love who they want. That's what makes this country so great. But don't try to change a word that's older than us in the process.
I want to turn to Julia, because the latest polls I saw, I think it was the Gonzales Research and Marketing Strategies, the figure I saw was 49% that support the gay marriage, 47% opposed. So it's a fairly close. With those kinds of numbers, it seems to me that the opponents will probably be able to gather the signatures. As you look down the road, what kind of... Is this going to be as close as it looks with this polling? What's your sense about the political landscape here?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think that it's going to be close no matter what. And, you know, I think that the opposition probably will get the signatures to put it on the ballot in November. But, you know, there's a lot of time between, we're March here now, so March and November. And this issue, you know, it's not over, and it's going to come down to whoever has the best, you know, groundwork and can, you know, educate people on this issue. And there's a lot of time to do that. And, you know, I think that it'll hold up. And I saw a poll that said in the Washington Post that it was 50%. But, you know, like we were saying that, you know, this issue has been picking up momentum across the country in the last year. Four states have now approved gay marriage, and I don't think it's going to slow down anytime soon. So I think we have the benefit of the momentum behind us.
It seems to me that the political landscape between now and November is somewhat complicated in terms of the folks who are supportive of gay marriage. Because on the one hand, certainly you're going to have President Obama who's going to be on the ticket, and if you look at polls that gauge those people who are, say, under 40, you find, say, under 40 folks, 63% support it, 33% oppose it. When you get older, of course, then those figures begin to change, although they're still closer than you would think, about a 10-point difference. On the other hand, when you look at the African-American community, which should also probably turn out, at least in fairly substantial numbers, with President Obama, you then get it much more a dicier look, because, for instance, 41% of black Democrats support it, but 53% of black Democrats oppose it. So you're getting some real mix here. How do you see this playing out? I mean, how do you overcome on the one hand, you'll have some voter advantage because it is a general election, the president's on the ballot. On the other hand, you do have a segment of the Democratic Party that is a lot more evenly divided on this issue. What do you think, Julia?
I mean, like you put it well. It's a tricky issue. It's going to be a tricky election to make sure that it passes. But you know, I mean, I think just making sure that, you know, we talk to as many voters that we can, you know, get them registered to vote and get them out to the polls, and make sure that they, you know, make a personal appeal to them. Make sure they understand the issue the right way, and I think we'll be successful.
Well, Charles, what about you? I mean, I've sort of described the sort of political landscape. In some ways, it may favor your position. On the other hand, you get a much, much larger electorate than you do, say, in off-year elections, which may perhaps may work against you. How do you see the landscape in terms of the kinds of folks that are going to be out there voting?
Well, I think you certainly identified it well. You're going to get a larger percentage of Black Americans that are going to vote. You're certainly going to get a larger percentage of conservative voters that are going to come out and vote, because many of the conservative voters really want to see a change in the White House. And I think that because of that, it will make it difficult, I think, for this marriage bill as it stands to remain the same. It's going to be harder for it not to be overturned. I feel pretty confident that it will be overturned. Historically speaking, many Black Americans have leaned toward traditional marriage. Very much a focus on faith for a lot of Black Americans across this state and across the country. And to be quite honest with you, there's a resentment, a very strong resentment, when this whole non-traditional marriage or non-traditional union issue is compared to the plight of Black Americans and the plight and the discrimination and the inequality that Black Americans face, because there really is no comparison. You have to choose to your union, or choose your mate who you want to live with or spend the rest of your life with. That's one thing I do disagree with Julia on, when she made the comment, you can't choose who you love. I completely disagree with that.
You don't think sexual orientation is an aid to you? Don't you think that's a choice?
I think it's a choice regardless. I think I made a choice when I got married. I think I made a choice when I chose who I chose. I think Julia makes a choice when she chooses who she chooses. I do think that you have a choice of whether you're going to love or not, and who you want to be with.
Julia,
when you wake up every morning, if I can just make this last point, when you wake up every morning, you can't choose to be Black or white. You are what you are. But when it comes to social relationships with people, you choose your partners.
Julia, why don't you address that?
I'd have to disagree on this. You absolutely cannot choose who you fall in love with. You know, you can't choose any more if you fall in love with a blonde or a brunette. You're born the way you are, and you can't help who you fall in love with. And, you know, how are we supposed to say, you know, if you are a female and you are in love with another woman, that, you know, you have a choice to suppress that? You know, we saw that, you know, 50 years ago, and a lot of people just got married because to somebody of the opposite sex, just because that was what you had to do in, say, the 1950s. But then later on, you know, you're seeing all these divorces and things like that. You know, you can only hide it for so long, I think, in a society that doesn't accept it. But, you know, Charles, I mean, do you have gay and lesbian friends? Have you had this conversation with them? Do they think it's a choice of who you fall in love with?
Real quickly.
I really can't even respond. I find it hard to believe that anyone would argue with the fact that you choose who you're going to be with. I really can't. I don't know what to say. I can't respond to that. I really can't.
Well, we've been taking a look at the issue of gay marriage. The legislation looks as if it's now going to be on its way to probably a November election, where voters will get their own chance to voice their opinion on the legislation. And no doubt it will be a fairly lively debate, as we've heard a bit here this morning as well. We've been talking to Julia Glanz. She's with Equality Maryland. She's an organization that's been working to get passage of the law. And also on the phone, we've had Charles Lawler, who's with New Day Maryland, an organization that opposes the law and no doubt will be working to get it overturned in November. You've been listening to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.
Thank you.